And the night was young. A smile brought us together, and I was wondering whether we'd meet again someday. The moon was yellow, and a song was sung. That vocal inspiration gave me the inclination to give my heart away. Here we are. Is our romance to continue? Will it be my luck to win you? May I look that far? My love is mellow.
And the Moon Was Yellow by Frank Sinatra to start things off here today. Welcome back to Still Talking. I'm Kieran Light. I'm the guy who never, ever shuts up about sports. That's a great song. I didn't mean to cut off Frank like that. I know he's the greatest singer of all time, but I didn't want to keep you guys waiting anymore. Bit of a somber note to start off this today's show. For those of you who may know, Sea Bears player Chad Postimus, he unfortunately passed away on Wednesday. He was born in 1991 here in Winnipeg, where he quickly got into the game of basketball, came from a big basketball family. He was 33 years old. He played in the CEBL since 2019, but he also played in other leagues across the globe. He played college ball down in the States, and he had the chance to play for his hometown team. He was here with the Sea Bears since their inaugural season last year, and he was here with us this past season. He was one of our best players. He was consistently a double-double guy. I know at one point he was doing really well in the plus-minus category. A really effective player, and he was a fan favorite. Earlier this month, I believe it was during practice, he suffered a brain aneurysm. And this past Wednesday, after complications due to corrective surgery, he finally succumbed to his injuries. I never met the guy personally. So when speaking of his character, I'm referring to things I've heard from those who did know him. They say he lit up the room, always a smile. He was an interested and eager person. And while I never, and like I said, I never met him, something that he had, this energy I think that exuded him, that it felt like I kind of did meet him and I did know him to some degree, even though, again, I never met the guy at all. And I think that he kind of exudes Winnipeg's spirit because, yeah, I never knew him and I felt like I did, and he was larger than life and he was enthusiastic and passionate, and I think he did a really great job representing the city. You know, he was with the, like I said, he was with the Sea Bears since their inaugural season last year, but he used what platform he had for good. He was always eager to meet fans, whether it was older fans or, like, you know, young children who go to their first pro basketball game and fall in love with the sport, and he was there to make sure that they had a good impression of what the sport can be and making sure that they're enjoying themselves and having fun, enjoying the culture of Winnipeg. And remember, look at how the city rallied behind this team. And he was kind of the poster boy because he was the hometown guy. So, like, we all rallied around him, and I could tell that that was something he loved. He did all kinds of community work. He helped make that basketball court, the new one that was newly renovated. It's gorgeous, the one by Mayfair Recreation Center. And it's very sad that he passed away. Again, he's only 33 years old and suffered a terrible injury. But I think that the thing that makes the city so great, and something that while I didn't know him, I feel like I get the sense that he would want us to continue moving forward with that spirit of Winnipeg. Let's be welcoming to everybody around us. Let's be eager and enthusiastic. Let's be passionate about the things we have. There's a lot of criticisms I could say of this city, but there's a lot of great things, too. Chad Postumus is going to be missed around here. We're going to look back and we're going to think, man, what would Chad want? Or he would love this. And that's going to make us a bit somber. But I think we should all just remember the kind of people we have here in this city. And remember just to give everybody a break, because at any point, it can all go away. In my personal opinion, this is a take that I've heard going around from some people reacting to the news. I think his jersey should be hung in the rafters of Canada Life. We should put up a jersey and keep it there forever. And then down the line, if and when we get a new arena, put it back up there. Because that's the treatment that he deserves. Now getting into things for the show. I think today I'm going to do things a bit differently. I'm actually interested in taking some phone calls. So if you have any burning NBA or NFL questions that you want answered by a 20-something-year-old college kid, go ahead. The number is 204-269-8636. I'll say it again, 204-269-8636. If you have any questions at all, call that number. I'll try to keep an eye on the phone here, check out who's calling, and then I'll make sure to repeat the number throughout the show as well. Just getting right into things. The Raptors, they're making some great improvements. So last night they beat the Timberwolves 110-105. And by the way, this is the longest home game winning streak in the NBA. It's the 20th straight time the Raptors have beaten the Timberwolves at home. Remind you, they're not in the same conference, so they only play two games against each other, one at home, one away. So for the past 20 years, Minnesota has not won a game in Toronto. The Raptors, they moved to 4-12. They're still in the bottom of the East. They're no longer the worst record in the East. That's held by the Sixers right now. But, they're a bottom feeder. Timberwolves, though, they fall to 8-7. They're still having that slow start that I thought they would have. I got to be honest, guys. The Raptors might be the most exciting 4-12 team ever. Because, look, they're close in all of their games against tough opponents, teams like Denver and Boston and whatnot. They're getting strong offensive output from all their young stars. I mean, I'm seeing so much development from all these players, and there's certain guys in particular that I'll definitely talk about. They just got Scotty back last night after not having him for about 2-3 weeks. And they're still waiting on Emmanuel Quickly to come back. He's dealing with that partially torn UCL. So despite all this offensive output that we're getting from our young stars who are learning how to become basketball players and not just college guys, they're learning how to, like, what roles they can fill and how they can do that efficiently. Despite all that, they're still the number one odds at getting Cooper Flagg, according to Bodog. So, look, as a Raptors fan, even though we're losing games, I'm really enjoying this season. I mean, look at last night in Toronto again. That's a team that made it to the conference finals last year. By all means, that should be a blowout win for the Timberwolves. And the Raptors sold out the arena, and the fans were just loud. And last night was their, like, they call it the GOAT night because they were doing one of their thank yous, appreciation games to Vince Carter. They wore the cool city jerseys. They had the throwback court. And the Raptors were playing well. Like, I mean, they got the win, but I mean, go watch the highlights. Near the end of the game, Grady Dick gets a rebound. He's getting trapped by three guys, somehow gets out of it, runs down the court, throws up a lob, and then R.J. Barrett, the new star of Toronto, comes in and just gets the alley-oop, and the whole crowd erupts. The play was so good, I saw House of Highlights and ESPN posted. For them to post a Canadian team like that, hell has to freeze over. Talking about RJ, he has been more than a revelation. He has been everything I've ever thought he was coming out of college. I remember that year, that was when the Raptors were a good team. We were a contending team. So we didn't have a top pick, and he and Zion and Cam Reddish and John Morant were sort of like the four. Those are the four guys. Those are the top prospects. And so RJ Barrett, he went third overall to the Knicks, and I was always like, oh, that sucks. I would love, love, love to have RJ Barrett on the Raptors. Canadian guy. His godfather is Steve Nash. His dad, I believe, played for the Raptors. And I was always a believer in his talent. He goes to New York, and in my opinion, he was used almost disgracefully, and he became an inconsistent shooter. He wasn't super effective defensively, wasn't utilized really at all. And I remember when he got traded to Toronto. One, that was like a dream come true, because, again, I always wanted to see him in a Raptors jersey. We just didn't get him because we were good at the time. And when he gets traded to Toronto, and I see him in that press conference with the Raptors logo behind him, I'm thinking, oh, he's going to be good. I just knew it. I just had a feeling. He's going to be good. And he's been spectacular. Last night he had his fifth 30-point performance of the season. His last three games, including last night, at Boston, 25 points, 10 rebounds, 15 assists, triple-double. Versus Indiana, 39 points, 9 rebounds, 5 assists. And then last night against Minnesota, 31 points, 3 assists, 3 steals, 7 rebounds. He's been spectacular. And not only that, he's shooting the ball so well, so effectively. Yesterday, he was 10 for 14 from the field. I mean, I'm so impressed with RJ Barrett, and I think going forward, what he can become for the Raptors, I think he can be the second star. I'm going to say it. The Raptors right now, they're a rebuilding team. They're going to try and get back to a championship in these coming years. I think RJ Barrett can be one of the core foundational pieces of a championship team. And I don't care that he wasn't really that great in New York. I know there's still a lot of criticism that, like, some people think that this is a flash in the pan and, you know, all these other things. I don't care. I saw it as soon as he got to Toronto last year, midseason. He was playing better, scoring more. And now, this year, with even more opportunity, more time in the system, Darko has, you know, more time to tinker and see how things look and prepare and use him correctly. Because, like I said, he was never used correctly in New York. And RJ Barrett is flourishing in Toronto. He is going to be a core foundational piece of a championship team. Other Raptors that are playing super well. Here, I saw the stat the other day. I couldn't find it, but I did remember it. Of the 5 players in the NBA with the biggest leap in points per game, the Raptors have 2 of them. Grady Dick and Ochai Agbaji. Now, Grady Dick in particular has been spectacular in his own right. Last season as a rookie, he was not that great. He only averaged 8.5 points. He was like 1 assist, 2 rebounds, kind of inefficient shooter. But this season, he's just like, last season was his sophomore slump, I think it was. Last season as a rookie, he just wasn't prepared for the league. Well, now he is. He's got that year under his belt because he's coming in. Now he's averaging 18.7 points per game, nearly 19 points. He has 3 30-point games. In back-to-back games this season, he beat his own career high. First it was 30, then the next game, 31. And the weird thing is he's making shots at like a similar rate that he was last year. He's only shooting like a little bit better, 42%-ish both years. But the thing is, he's doing so much more with his role. He's averaging more rebounds and more assists, and he's getting more opportunities. Part of that is because Scotty's hurt, but he was cooking even when Scotty was playing for that first week and a half or so, and when IQ was there. And he's been fantastic. Like I said, it was him and RJ on that electric play near the end, down the stretch against the Timberwolves. And it was him and RJ that have been making clutch shots for this team all year. Again, they haven't really been winning many of these games because, again, at the end of the day, this is still just a young, developing team. They're going to have growing pains. They're going to have certain problems closing out games. But to see this kind of improvement, I think that like the Raptors right now, and especially going forward, are one of the most interesting teams in the league. And they have so many different avenues they can take. Just to remind you guys of the phone number, 204-269-8636. 204-269-8636. If you have any questions, let me know. Don't make me look like an idiot, guys. Please call. I want to talk about some of the other guys that the Raptors are getting good minutes out of. I mentioned Ochai Agbaji, who's been great since we got him last year, and now he's even better this year. But they're also getting good minutes out of other young guys, Jonathan Mobo, Jameson Battle, Davion Mitchell, And they have all these trade assets, too. So here they are. They have a young star in Scotty Barnes. He's an all-star. He can be a franchise player. I don't care what anyone says. He's a franchise player. And then they trade for IQ and RJ. IQ is awesome. That's why they paid him the money. And RJ's been fantastic. They're getting development out of all these young guys. And they still have these, again, young franchise cornerstones. And then even more young role players that they're getting good minutes out of. And they have trade assets. I don't know what their pick situation is looking like. I'm pretty sure they have a few from just different deals that they've made. Like, yeah, they got picks last year from Indiana and New York. And then they have certain assets they can trade for even more picks or other young players. Jakob Poeltl has been fantastic for the Raptors this year. And I think he's bringing his trade stock up a ton. In his last four games, 25 and 18, 35 and 12, 30 and 15, 15 and 12. That is like... I mean, that's all NBA. Those are all NBA numbers if you keep that up for a whole season. And he's been, like, playing super efficient basketball, and he's getting all kinds of rebounds. He technically had a 2020 game, that 25 and 18. They took two rebounds off for some reason. I really don't know why. And so I think what the Raptors can do with Poeltl, because he doesn't really match their timeline, they could trade him to a team that is in desperate need of a center and get... I think they could get two first-round picks if they play it right. Like, if OKC's injury issues keep coming up, if Chet comes back or he has complications with his recovery and so he's delayed another month or so, and maybe Hartenstein, you know, gets hurt again and they just need a backup or they need some depth or something. I don't see why the Raptors couldn't get two picks out of that. The Thunder have so many picks to give up. Like, there are other teams. What if the Lakers want a center so they can keep AD at a true power forward? Just get a guy who can rebound a ton, which clearly Jakob can do. Then I don't see why the Lakers can't give up, or the Raptors can't get two first-round picks in the Lakers. They have other trade assets as well. Bruce Brown, who hasn't really played at all, and Garrett Temple, same thing. But these guys are effective veteran role players. I understand if you want to keep them around to keep a veteran presence in this locker room, so that it's not just a bunch of young guys trying to learn this league and become a great team, which is difficult without veteran players who have been around the block. But I also think that the Raptors just have these guys that are valuable pieces. I mean, Bruce Brown, last year, he was, in the offseason going into last season, he was a valuable piece because he was coming off that championship with the Nuggets. And then he signs with Indiana. And so then all kinds of teams were trying to get Bruce Brown off of Indiana. Denver wanted him back. I know that, I think Golden State wanted him. Are a lot of teams that were trying to get him, and somehow the Raptors ended up getting him, which is funny. But it's clear that there are other teams that want a guy like Bruce Brown, that want a guy like Garrett Temple, that want a guy like Jakob Poeltl, and so the Raptors could give up one of them or all of them or two of them and get even more assets moving forward. And then, like I said earlier, they have the number one odds at the main event, that's main spelled with an E, Cooper Flagg. Could you imagine a lineup with Scotty and all of his defensive and playmaking capabilities, Cooper Flagg and all of his defensive and scoring capabilities, RJ with his just flourishment as a shot creator and an efficient shooter, Grady Dick as a three-point specialist and energy guy and slasher, and IQ as a point guard. That's a fantastic lineup. That's like one of the best young cores in the league, if not the best. I mean, OKC is still technically a young core. So right now, as a Raptors fan, I couldn't be happier with this season because I think we've finally gotten out of that purgatory that was 2020 to 2024 of last year. Sorry, last season, 2024. It's weird. You know what I mean? And so now we're able to move forward. And after the trades we made last season, my faith and trust in Masai Ujiri has been totally re-upped. I believe him fully. I will go to the ends of the earth for that man. And I'm so excited with this team moving forward. I think, like, they could continue to be a tanking team and get Flag, or you know what? If once all their guys are back and healthy, they get cooking, I don't see why the Raptors couldn't be a playoff team. I think that they could compete for one of the top seeds. I don't think they have to necessarily be in the plan because the East right now is not that great outside of Boston and Cleveland. Moving on to some other young players that are just blowing away expectations. Bo Nix. Where did this come from, Bo Nix? He's competing for Offensive Rookie of the Year now. Now, I don't think he deserves it. I think it's Daniels, if not Bowers. I mean, I feel like Bowers' name should be brought up more. He's been, like, record-breaking. He's top 10 in receiving yards as a rookie tight end, not just among rookies or among tight ends. He's just top 10 in receiving yards, which is insane. But I want to talk about Bo Nix because the Falcons came into town in Denver, I believe, on Sunday, and the Broncos absolutely routed them, 38-6. When I saw that score, I was legitimately shocked because I thought going into that game, I picked the Falcons because I thought that was an obvious pick. But no, the Broncos absolutely dominated them, and it was mostly, I mean, their defense was fantastic, obviously only allowing 6 points, but like they had insanely efficient offensive output from Bo Nix. Bo Nix, the guy I was highly critical of when they drafted him, and I've never really believed in him. I might start believing in him now. Because he was 28 for 33, 307 yards, 4 touchdowns, no picks, a 145 passer rating. Looking in the advanced stats, because I think that sometimes advanced stats can really show you the bigger picture and show you the little details that basic ones don't. Here's a stat that I saw online from this game. Bo Nix had a .66 EPA per play, which essentially means that Bo Nix was so efficient that every time he dropped back to pass the ball, it was like adding 0.2 points to the Broncos' score. That's an elite number. I mean, start of the season, he was bad. He was, you know, Broncos were winning a couple of games. They're competing like they beat the Jets, but, you know, just the Jets. And then he starts to play a bit better. Okay. And I know this because one of my friends is a Broncos fan, and he kept hyping him up. So as Bo Nix progressed, his excitement progressed, and now it's at an all-time high because Bo Nix just dismantled the Falcons' defense that I keep trying to believe in for some reason, even though they have no pass rush, which, again, is weird because they have Grady Jarrett and Matthew Judon. It's impressive. And you know what? That Broncos defense made the Falcons offense, which was one of the more hot ones in the league. They made them look stupid. Absolutely stupid. Kirk Cousins, less than 200 yards, no touchdowns, a pick, and he also had a fumble, a 68 rating. Bijan Robinson held to 2.9 a carry, no touchdowns. Drake London, 3 catches. Kyle Pitts only had 1 catch. Like, they could not get anything going. Broncos defense really stepped up. And the other thing that really impressed me about Bo Nix's performance, none of his receivers had over 100 yards. You'd think that when you throw for 300 and have 4 touchdowns, you know, one of your receivers would have maybe 2 touchdowns or over 100 yards. No, none of them did. The leading receiver is Cortland Sutton at 78. Then you had Devon Vele at 66. Lil Jordan Humphrey, what a name, 52 yards. Mims, 49. Williams, 28. Franklin, 15. The guys with touchdowns, Troy Franklin 1, Mims 1, Humphrey again 1. I think Bo Nix maybe had one rushing. No, he did not. But, like, this is what I mean. The Broncos were just incredibly efficient, and Bo Nix was spreading the love. He does not have one of the most elite receiving corps in the league. And that's, again, that's a Falcons defense that should be good. And he was cooking with what he had. So if Bo Nix can keep this up, I don't see why his name shouldn't be brought up in Rookie of the Year discussions. I still think, again, because it's Rookie of the Year, not Rookie of November to January. So it should still be either Jaden Daniels or Brock Bowers. But even if he doesn't win Rookie of the Year, if he keeps this up, I think we can quickly shed the narratives that it wasn't a good pick. I mean, Sean Payton is someone that I've scrutinized a lot of, like, Sean Payton's coaching decisions and his resume over these past couple of years, even though he is a Hall of Fame coach. But recently he hasn't been, you know, doing so well with the whole Russell Wilson thing last year. And I didn't like the Bo Nix. And he kept trying to say to people, oh, he's so good, he's so good. And again, for a while it didn't seem like it was. He might be right. The Broncos, when I came on this show, first time ever on air, and me and my studio manager Michael did that draft show, I said that the Broncos have never once drafted a good quarterback, which is true. They have never, ever drafted a quarterback, because Elway was drafted by the Colts, and Manning was also drafted by the Colts. And so I thought there's no reason to believe they could do it. They may have found their guy. I mean, for the first time since Manning won that Super Bowl, the Broncos may have their franchise quarterback. I don't want to make any predictions going forward, but I do think it's fair to say that Bonex is a lot better than advertised. Talking about quarterbacks that aren't better than advertised, they're 10 times worse than even your lowest expectations. Daniel Jones, no longer a Giant. Finally. Finally, after being benched earlier this week and then getting reps in at scout team safety, Daniel Jones requested his release and the Giants granted it. His record as a Giants starter, 24-44-1. He's 70 passing touchdowns, 47 interceptions, 84.3 passer rating career. And so, yeah, you know, he sucks. Everyone knew he sucked. The Giants kept believing him. They paid him an exorbitant contract, which is now causing them to take $20 million in dead cap. Where do the Giants go from here? Also, I'm not getting any phone calls, guys. Come on. Where do the Giants go from here? Tank. Take a quarterback. Cam Moore, Jadeur Sanders, any of those guys. Just tank. Because you have an elite weapon at Malik Nabers or some guy who looks like he can be an elite weapon. Do you fire Brian Daboll? This just happened, so I don't have any like thoughts recorded or notes taken on this. Do you fire Brian Daboll? I don't think so. I don't think Brian Daboll was given a fair shot in New York. He was stuck with Daniel Jones, and then management, you know, wouldn't move off of him. If you watch the Hard Knocks, you know how incompetent their management can be. What the whole Saquon thing? That's the other thing. His elite running back, they didn't re-sign him. Didn't really give him a chance to really use his talents. Remember, Brian Daboll got them to the divisional round. They were a good team with him. So, I don't think Brian Daboll deserves to be fired. I think he's had a bad run of things. I think if next year, depending on how well they do in the offseason, if they continue to struggle, then you can really have the conversation of does Brian Daboll deserve to be fired. I could see a world where, like, going by the end of the season or going into this offseason, the Giants are like, okay, you know what, clean slate. Let's just get, now we got rid of Daniel Jones, Saquon's gone. Now we have this Neighbors guy moving forward. You know what, let's get rid of Daboll too, and let's get a new coach. Let's bring in a new coach and a new quarterback at the same time so they can come in together. I could see that. But I still think Brian Daboll is one of the better coaches in the NFL. I think I put him in that top third of head coaches because we've seen what he can do with young quarterback talent. We saw what he did with Daniel Jones, with Josh Allen. Like I said, the Giants were a playoff team with him. It's just that Daniel Jones has no talent to develop. Where does Daniel Jones go from here? Probably back up. I mean, he's $20 million. $20 million is $20 million. Doesn't matter if he's on the team. The check still clears. So he can go to whatever team he wants. I wouldn't be surprised if he goes and he just kind of does a Mac Jones or a Carson Wentz and just sits behind a better quarterback, wins games, gets to feel like feel what it's like to win games in the NFL. I could see that, absolutely. I'm just going to put the number out there again. 204-269-8636. I'm not seeing any flashing red lights. That's it for me, I guess. I'm just going to play the song. This is Layla by Unknown Mortal Orchestra. Have a good weekend, everybody. The mics are coming up, but you know me, I don't shut up.